Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Leaf Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the evolution of anti-Semitism. Maybe we'd like to talk about other, better things, but still, there is anti-Semitism in the world, and it's evolving, and we'd like to understand, where is it headed? Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, we see that there was anti-Semitism all throughout history, only it came in different packages. In ancient times, the evolution of anti-Semitism started with religious anti-Semitism. Mostly people were idolaters, and suddenly there was this kind of religion that believes in one God, and it was perceived as a kind of disregard for all of their gods and so on. Later came Christianity, and the Jews were blamed for killing Jesus. In the Middle Ages, there were many blood labels. Jews were looked upon as the manifestation of Satan, and only if they convert to Christianity can something good come out of them. Meaning, up to this point, we're talking about religious anti-Semitism. Later, it was a more social kind of anti-Semitism, that Jews harm society, that they take their money. They have the most powerful positions in the country. They're actually the ones that control everything and influence society as a whole to its detriment. Later, there was a more racial kind of anti-Semitism, like we saw in the Second World War, where the last stage of anti-Semitism is political anti-Semitism, that there is strong resistance and acute criticism against Israeli policies. This is the modern kind of anti-Semitism. And nowadays we see all the different kinds of anti-Semitism together. Religious anti-Semitism, especially from the side of Islam. There's the racial kind of anti-Semitism that because you're a Jew, then it's allowed to hurt you in different ways. And of course, there's the economical background that Jews are greedy, that they use the world, sucking their money and everything. And also there's, of course, the political anti-Semitism against Israeli policies. So this is a short overview of the different kinds of anti-Semitism. And we'd like to ask, is anti-Semitism going through some kind of evolution? First of all, you gave a very good overview of the development of anti-Semitism in parallel to the development of mankind. And there's not that much to add. Of course, we can elaborate on each of these stages, but in general, this is correct. The only thing I'd like to add is that anti-Semitism, it develops, it evolves, and why shouldn't it? Because it lives within the very foundations of human society. Because the egoistic desire that exists in man, the more it evolves, the more it feels that in front of it there is something that is its very opposite, which is that point that's called Israel or a Jew, that says that it's necessary to develop, to evolve above the ego, that instead of dispersing and moving away from each other, that we have to reach love another as yourself. And that point is the very opposite of our nature, and it exists in several people that are called Jews. Why are there such people that have this point and people that don't have it? It's very interesting that this point called a Jew or Israel, consisting of the words Yashar Kel, meaning to be aimed straight at the positive upper force of nature, as opposed to the rest of mankind, that comes from the negative force of nature. These are two forms in nature, the two forms of nature. And therefore, what follows is that there are people in whom exists the negative egoistic force, and there are people that have both the negative egoistic force and the positive altruistic force. And when both of these forces exist in them, the positive and the negative, they're called Jews, according to their inner essence. And those in whom the positive point of bestowal, connection, and love of others has not yet been revealed, they're called the nations of the world. We went through many stages of development throughout history, and that point that was revealed in ancient Babylon in some of the Babylonians, called the point in the heart, the point of bestowal, of love of others, of connection, this point developed in Babylon. And those people that joined Abraham, as we see from the sources, Abraham arranged them as a group, and he called this group Israel, consisting of the words Yashar Kel, meaning those that are aimed straight at attaining the upper force of nature, which is the force of bestowal, as opposed to the force that exists in human beings, which is the force of reception, which is the opposite force. And this is how they developed these two groups. There were those who left the group of Israel and were inclined toward what we call the nations of the world, and there were those from the nations of the world that felt that they have this special closeness, something that draws them to Israel, and this is what they did. Meaning, Jews are not a nationality, but it is according to the point in the heart in which a person feels associated with the positive force of nature and not the negative force that all of mankind is in, that comes from the ego. And this is how we see human development. The more humanity evolves and develops, the stronger its demand towards Jews, towards those that say that we have to be connected between ourselves and with the upper force. And then, all of mankind that does not feel this inclination, but that feels that there is some kind of rift, some kind of a division, a greater and greater distance between them and the Jews. And therefore, here there is plenty of room for different speculations, philosophies, thoughts. And besides, you also have the matter of the different methods, religions, beliefs. Because Jews say that it's necessary to be connected with one another, and that the only thing to bow to is this force of connection, to see it as the goal, the force of correction, a special force that is higher than man, and that besides that, there is nothing, neither in corporeality nor in spirituality, but only the force of bestowal. And the force of reception was given to us only in order for us to be able to distinguish the force of bestowal, to exalt it. And those that belong to the force of reception, they say, no, we have many gods, we have many methods. Everyone can pray to their own god and to worship him however they want. And it's all pluralism, and we understand each other. Besides the Jews, we understand everyone. And if so, it really divides mankind into two camps, where there is the one camp that's really small, called the people of Israel, from the words Yashar Kel, being aimed straight at the force of bestowal, and the other camp, the nations of the world, that have different images, idols, and so on. And Israel don't have something like that, because eventually what they need is to only be connected between them. Meaning, you don't have to perform many actions or precepts or hold many events, but the connection between them at heart, as one man and one heart, this is what they say that has to be kept. But because Israel are also next to the nations of the world, and also because Israel constantly get the burdening of the heart that comes from the ego that also pulls them to different kinds of idolatry, like with the idols, like with the different kinds of fetish. And so what follows is that also the nation of Israel throughout its history developed different such as if things, means, that they look at as something holy, something special, that has to be kissed, bowed to, something. Meaning there's a kind of a mixture here between the root of the true Judaism, which is only the force of bestowal and only the force of connection and love of others, and different other signs that will join along the way, that are as a root and branch, let's call it that way, that in our corporeal world there are also signs that are more related to the force of bestowal than to the force of reception, even though that these forces have no expression in the corporeal world, but still mankind has this kind of an inclination toward that. And so we see that throughout history, Judaism, starting with the destruction of the first temple, and then the second temple, and then throughout the exile, then Judaism also took upon itself many different signs that are actually associated only to spiritual actions. They have nothing to do with our body or this world, but they saw that this way they can keep themselves in some kind of a corporeal framework. And this is where the different signs that we have in this world come from. My teacher, the Rabash, used to call it customs. That this is how we have to keep them. And why, until when? That until a person nonetheless reaches from his broken egoistic form, where he doesn't know where, why, how, that we fell into the ego as a result of our entire very difficult history with all the wars and crusades, starting with Pharaoh and actually to this day. So what follows is that we also need some kind of an external strengthening, signs, what we call practical actions, that also keep a person in that. So we keep these actions, and it holds mankind. I mean, not mankind, but the Jewish people, until they repent, until they reach a state where we can already understand that the main thing is, and also as the Ibn Ezra writes and other authors, that the main thing is the work in the heart, and that we have to keep all the mitzvot, the precepts of the Torah, in our heart. And what we do with our hands, legs, or orally, it's all in all in order for us, in order for it to advance us toward the work in the heart. But actually, what the Creator wants is the hearts. So you talked about two directions here. The one is that there is the point in the heart, and there is the Jew, who is a person that has two forces that act in him, both the natural force of reception and also a unique force, which is a force of love, bestowal, love of others. This is actually what defines a Jew. And next to him, there are the nations of the world. So in the nations of the world, there is only the egoistic negative force, and in a Jew, there is the negative egoistic force, and next to it, also the positive altruistic force. So this is the first phenomenon you explained about, and the other phenomenon is that over time Jews started performing, keeping different external characteristics that maybe separated them from the rest of the people in the world and defined them as Jews externally wise. Well, for over 2,000 years now, we, as a nation, as a people, are disconnected from our spiritual perception. It's called being in exile. Exile isn't that we geographically left the land of Israel and now we're coming back to it. But it's a matter of an inner exile, that we're not in that quality of love and bestowal and connection between us. When we fell from this level, we ceased to exist as the people of Israel. So the topic of our show are the different incarnations of anti-Semitism throughout history. What changed about anti-Semitism over time? Every time there was as if a different reason for anti-Semitism. First of all, anti-Semitism comes as a result of every person feeling that in Jews, there is a certain quality that does not exist in others. And this quality is that there is a certain inclination toward connection in Jews. But in our world, it's not that conspicuous that it's an inclination toward connection. But nonetheless, it is a quality that allows them to permeate things more deeply, understand people more deeply, connect more deeply, because they have this inclination outwards. What is this inclination? Is it just a potential, or it is an inclination toward a good potential connection with others and a bad potential connection with others, meaning he feels the others, smells them, so to speak, much more than someone who's not Jewish, due to that preparation that he has in order to connect with others in a good way. And he can also use it in a bad way, as if, not really, but to some extent. Meaning, not in order to harm others, but in order to benefit off others for sure. This is what we see in business, finance, and so on. What changed? What's the difference between religious anti-Semitism, social anti-Semitism, where the Jew was? It's all according to the development. The more developed the ego is, the more it evolves in mankind from generation to generation. 2,000-3,000 years ago, we saw how primitive people were, how primitive nations were, and how much they have advanced. To this day, they cannot grasp that the upper force is a force. It's not a man or a woman or the different images of this world that could walk around, that there's nothing holy about flesh and blood, that there's no holiness in a stone or in a tree, that holiness can only be in the force of connection as opposed to the force of separation. And these are the only two forces that exist in nature, that's it. Meaning mankind cannot grasp these spiritual foundations that are abstract of matter, of material actions, physical actions. And therefore it's a problem that they cannot perceive, grasp what true Judaism is due to their natural inability, the lack of the positive force as opposed to the negative force. For this, you need two forces. Like in the wisdom of Kabbalah, you need two forces. You need the heart, which is the egoistic force, and the point in the heart, which is the foundation for the altruistic force. And it doesn't exist in everyone. And also, it doesn't matter whether you were born a Jew or you weren't born a Jew. It's not that important because eventually the point in the heart, the positive force, it awakens, it has to awaken, you can awaken it in every person. Simply in Jews, it has awoken as a result of Babylon before others. Yeah, before others. This is what it's all about. And in the future, eventually everyone has the potential. As it says, all shall know me from small to great. So, going back to the different forms of anti-Semitism, the essence of anti-Semitism, whether it's of one or another kind, is it different in its different types or sorts? The essence of anti-Semitism differs both in types and also in degrees, because every nation has an anti-Semitism of their own toward Jews, according to the 70 nations of the world that exist, the 70 forms of ego that exist in mankind. So each of them has a bit of a different form towards Jews. And the more the nations of the world develop, the more the ego in them develops, that this is what brings them to technological development, cultural, educational, and so on. Along with it, also their attitude towards Jews develops. They better understand, feel, grasp that Jews are something else, something different, more successful. And then, as a result, of course they have a bigger and stronger demand toward the people of Israel from generation to generation. Let's take an anti-Semite from the Middle Ages and a contemporary anti-Semite. Is there a difference between what the two feel? Of course, a person from the Middle Ages felt much more deeply that everything that happens to him and his dependence on Jews versus today. Today we have medicine, chemistry, technology, different kinds of things by which we can use nature to our benefit. We understand the human systems, especially financial systems. And therefore, those things that Jews were especially engaged in, both being next to the rulers, especially in the East, next to every king or ruler, and the Arab countries, for example, there was a Jew, Jews that were doctors, Jews that were engaged in the wisdom of the stars, that recommended what to do with the people. So today, the nations of the world already have enough knowledge, power, intellect that allows them to be engaged in that too, so that not only Jews will be engaged in it. So can we see this as a point of hope that over time anti-Semitism is decreasing because the differences are dissipating? No. Anti-Semitism will not decrease as a result, but to the contrary. It will go and grow and will become more unique. Will it take on a new evolutional form? Yes. Of what kind? That Jews are hated because there is some kind of a spiritual force in them that we don't have. And it's not that they're more successful at science or medicine or the different things of this world. But the thing is that the more successful the nations of the world become in developing different kinds of wisdom, the more they feel that there is a certain uniqueness about the people of Israel, and that this uniqueness is more hidden, exalted, and spiritual. And therefore, anti-Semitism will grow and will become more precise, scrutinized, sharp, and subtle. And all in all, it'll become more threatening. So, a new form of anti-Semitism will evolve? Yes. And will it be cruder or more subtle? I don't know what you mean by cruder or more subtle, but it'll become ever more evident to a non-Jew that there is something about Jews that can't exist in him and that he wants it. Yeah, still, it makes him curious. He understands that due to it, Jews are more successful, that they're as if more chosen. Our time's almost up. I have to go to the final question. Up until now, we talked about the evolution of anti-Semitism, and you said that it will become more precise and more threatening. The way you see it, the way the wisdom of Kabbalah sees it, what can uproot anti-Semitism? That the nation of Israel will start functioning the way they're supposed to, meaning that they'll start connecting, and by that will set an example for the entire world of how to connect. And when you say to connect, what do you mean? To be connected as one man and one heart, like it says in the Torah. This picture where they're connected as one man, it's only for Jews or all people? For all people. But it has to start with the Jews, because only the Jews have the inclination towards it, the ability to do it, and it's their obligation. And this is the unique Jewish spiritual ability that you said that people feel that's missing in the world? They don't feel that this is what's missing, but they feel that the Jews have something that the world needs, that the world's lacking. So even if they get along without us in business, medicine, everything else there is in the world, still, it'll be even more lacking. Because then, they'll understand even better that because they lack this inclination toward connection, the ability to connect, they feel that this is what the world's lacking and that this is why the world's suffering. Meaning that eventually Jews are causing suffering in the world. So they can also eradicate suffering from the world. Yes, by connecting and becoming light onto the nations. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. I see that we still have a lot to talk about. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.